Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It is Thursday, March 12th, 2026. If you're keeping count, episode 130. Today, we've got the Rivian R2 pricing, range, and specs. BYD's 5-minute charging at 1500 kilowatts, and driving and charging the new Chevrolet Bolt, and of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily and EV News China podcasts. Joining us today is the Arcadian, Mr. Tom Mulogany, host of the YouTube channel State of Charge and the premier EV charging news site, evchargingstations.com. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of YouTube's Drive Electric with Dominic. And you've seen by now, but not heard if you're listening, our special guest today. He's back on the show. It's been too long. Dave Connor, host of Out of Spec. Dave.
Great to see you guys. I miss you guys. This is amazing.
Let's get into it. Great to have you back, Dave. You've probably owned, I don't know, half a dozen different EVs in the last 6 weeks since you were last on. But we've got a new Tesla for you to talk about as we get into the news on the podcast. But generally, you've been busy with AutoSpec, Dave, and you've been making some Bolt stuff that we'll get onto in a minute. How have you been?
Been very good. Been really busy. Excellent. Everything is good. Working hard, and you know, nothing is constant except change, right? So
absolutely. All right, we're gonna get into a lot of stuff today. Rivian R2 lineup, full trims, pricing, EPA range. This is the day that we've been waiting for. Not the day that Rivian said they're going to kill off the standard trim for the R1T and R1S. No surprise about that. But no more LFP packs at Rivian for now. The other thing, the big thing, that'll be R2. So, announced now. This is the very second that we can talk about it. Here are the different trims and the prices. I'll run through them, then we'll get into it and let you guys talk about it. So, I'll do it in price order, if that's okay. It won't be in the order that the vehicles arrive, which maybe I should have done it in that order. Price order, $45,000 vehicle, and it's coming in 2027. Standard battery, rear-wheel drive, 275 miles of range. That's been a bit of a moving target over the last 24 hours, but that's the latest guidance we've got. And then $48,490, standard rear wheel drive, long range, 87.9 kilowatt hour pack, 340 miles of range. Stepping up, $53,990, premium dual motor all wheel drive, again, same pack. And the first one, launch package, is coming in at $10 under $58,000. So this is the performance dual motor all-wheel drive with launch package, 87.9 kilowatt hour pack, 300 plus miles of range, and a 3.6 second 0-60. Now, before we get into it, I mean, no mention of the tri-motor, but if you were watching last week's show, you may have noticed that Tom said, well, you know, if the launch package comes in at 58 grand, I think I'm... Had you been tipped off, Tom?
I had been, but not till after I said that.
Okay, right. So you knew, but not
a couple
when you
days
said it.
After that. No. That was a guess, and my thought, Martin, really was with destination and handling. I really wanted to see that number under 60,000. You know, I wanted to see it start with a 9. So 50 to my goal was 59,990 with destination and handling. Now it's coming in at 59,485, so $500 less, and I think that's a win for the R2.
Amazing, Dave. What do you reckon?
Yeah, listen, for the top spec trim, I think that's a, it's seemingly a lot of value packed in that vehicle. And when are these going to be hitting the dealers or the showrooms, I should say?
It says spring. No exact calendar date, but spring.
Which is 8 days.
That's true. That's true. Now let me ask you this. You said 300 plus miles of range. Do you have any specs on like why the lower range? Is it a wheel configuration on this? Is it the output of the motors?
So I think it's because it's the performance spec. So it's going to be bigger wheels, I imagine.
21 inch.
So it's 21 inches. Let's get the specs up as well because we've got those. But yeah, it says 300 plus miles of range. So yeah, I don't know the exact reason. We can get into some
330 EPA estimate. For the performance dual motor.
Excellent. Let's get that. Let's have a look on here then. These are the EPA ranges and apologies. Let me make that slightly bigger. Can I do that? Okay, maybe not. Just see us just around the edges.
Bigger. I did.
There we go. All right. So I'd like it to fill the screen, but it's not quite filling the screen, but you can kind of see us around the edge. So that is the EPA range is on screen right now. If you're listening to us, I know it's a complete data dump. I'm sorry about that. It's total stats, but 275, because Tom had made this before some subsequent changes. 275 EPA, and then the rear wheel drive 345 is going to be the longest one they do, and then 330 and 330 miles for the two versions. And so, look, there we go. That's the number on it, Dave. So. I think, what do you think of the range numbers, Dave?
You know, what's surprising to me is such a small difference between the rear wheel drive with 19 inch wheels and the performance. What doesn't, it's only 15 miles of difference in range.
That's all.
And one other thing that seems a little odd or off to me, if you could pull that screen back up there, Martin, the difference in the performance versus the premium dual all-wheel, there isn't a difference, and that doesn't make sense to me. You got bigger wheels and you got higher output engines. Why are they both at 330? Something seems weird.
So that's the EPA, Tom. So that they can dictate EPA, can't they? They can play it down so that some that could be that there's some margin of error in there, or they can play with those numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they can. You're allowed to submit slightly lower numbers to the EPA than what your testing dictated. So for instance, let's say the performance all-wheel drive with 21-inch wheels really came in at 330, and the dual motor all-wheel drive with 20-inch wheels came in at 336. You know, they could just say, you know, they're both 330. There's no difference. If they choose to, and some manufacturers do that for, I guess, a variety of reasons. The wheel size, I think, is more important than the extra horsepower, in my opinion, because, you know, they won't necessarily use that during that extra power during the EPA testing. So it's there, but you don't really access it, you know, unless you're really thrashing it around, and they don't thrash it around when they're doing the EPA range testing. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me. The wheels could make a little bit of a difference, but evidently their testing showed that they were close enough to just call them both 330.
And Tom, do we know if these are both the magnetic motors that are in them?
So Rivian,
permanent magnet motors?
Yeah, Rivian hasn't, I don't believe they've formally explained what the motor configuration. I could be wrong. I could have missed it. But they haven't, I don't want to make a guess because they haven't formally announced that unless maybe Martin or Dominic, has caught that and I didn't.
No, I haven't caught it. So
yeah,
that's the Rivian. Are you talking about the Rivian made motors, Dave? So
yeah, I'm just curious if they have, you know, permanent magnets in both the rear, of course, but also maybe they've got a different type of motor in the front, like some manufacturers do.
Yeah, with
but
a disconnect for efficiency.
If they had actually gotten down to that level of detail in the press release,
I don't think so yet.
These are obviously different motors than in the R1, so I would assume they are. So you know, we don't have 100% clarification on that.
All right. Okay. Let's get into some of the features, Dom. And so on the performance variant, launch spec, heated and ventilated 12-way driver and passenger seats with lumbar support, 8 drive modes, and on the launch spec, 21-inch liquid tungsten all-season wheels. Lifetime. This is interesting. Let's get into some of the specs then. Lifetime autonomy plus. A special Rivian green key fob at launch, special color as well. It's a paid upgrade, but you can get access to a launch color and £4,500 towing on that. Dom, what do you think of the value that you're seeing at the moment at those prices?
I mean, they look pretty good to me, I would say. I really like that it's, what was it? So if we're looking at the performance dual motor. Coming is okay. That's the first one. The second one, the one that's coming in late this fall. So yeah. You get all that range, 4.6 second 0 to 60 for $53,990. So $54,000. I think that's kind of the spec I think most people will kind of look at, and I think that's close enough to $50,000 that where it should do pretty well. Yeah. The $45,000.
This is going to be strong competition for the Model Y, in my opinion. I mean, anybody who's going to cross shop a Model Y, they're going to be looking at this vehicle. You know, a Model Y performance is what, high 50s? And, you know, you owe it to yourself to look at this vehicle, in my opinion. I think in a lot of ways, it's much more premium. And then you go to the lower specs, I think I have seen the R2 in person, a pre-prototype, actually a year and a half ago at Electrify Expo out on Long Island. And if it's the right size for you, because it's not big, it's not real big, it's kind of an interesting size, but I haven't sat in it. So being 6'5", I'll be curious to see, you know, what's the posture like? How does it feel? Because the Y feels a little bit, I don't know, I wish I could slam the seat down a little bit. There's some things that are off in that. So it'll be really interesting to see. But I think a lot of people are going to cross shop this from the Y.
Let's talk a little bit about, if you're going to cross shop a Tesla, then autonomy is part of the story. So Rivian call it Autonomy Plus. For non-launch vehicles, it's going to be $49.99 a month. It's $50 a month subscription or $2,500 one time. And the R2 will come with much more capable hardware and LiDAR towards the end of the year. I wonder if they're timing that next one the non-launch models to time with the new hardware. I don't know. Those vehicles have a much higher level of autonomy, including, they say, eyes off driving. It's not said if the autonomous software for the next gen hardware is, you know, and any details about that. So because we haven't used it, we can't compare it. But clearly, if you're cross-shopping with a Tesla and autonomy is Tesla's big story that they want to talk about at the moment, then Rivian are going, it seems, toe-to-toe with them. And it has to be good. And they're adding LiDAR and they're adding new, more capable hardware. Tom, what do you think about that decision to go up front, be totally honest with the customers and say, if you buy the launch one, it won't be the spec that we can do in 6 months' time?
Yeah, I think they have to. I don't think they had a choice, Martin. I don't think they did it just to be, a great brand. if they launched this and sold, you know, 10,000 of them or 15,000 of them to the early, reservation holders, and then 6 months later said, oh, by the way, that system you have, it's crap. Like, we got a new one coming out next month, and it's going to provide eyes off. People would freak. So I'm not really going to give them credit for coming out and announcing that ahead of time. It's unfortunate that they couldn't be fully baked by the time this launches, because, you know, I think they're going to have some disappointed customers. A lot of people that aren't as savvy and understand this market as much as maybe the four of us and a lot of our listeners have follow everything. They're not going to know this. And they'd be very surprised. I think the average buyer would be very surprised to find out 6 months after a brand new vehicle launches that it's going to have a major upgrade to its ADAS system. And you know, that something that's going to provide that next level of autonomy, eyes off eventually, which is kind of like, you know, autonomy 2.5 kind of out of the scale of 5. I mean, that's what Tesla's at with you know, the FSD, they're kind of stuck in between 2 and 3 out of the 5 levels of autonomy. And, you know, you don't get to 3 until you really don't have to watch at all the car. Tesla appears to be close to that now, you know, with these, you know, pilot programs with no drivers in the car. So, I mean, they're pushing that edge. Rivian, you know, hasn't even started down that road. So, you know, I think they're a good 3 years behind Tesla, maybe 4 even.
You know,
I
Tom, think in this autonomy. This trend of manufacturers coming out with vehicles that are not fully baked yet is bad. I'll give you an example. We stepped up to the plate 1.5 years ago with the Porsche Macan 4 EV. And, you know, that we sprung for the hands-free driving. That vehicle, that 2024, will never be able to do lane changes, just simple lane changes, because it doesn't have the hardware in it, right? So this whole thing about how can you launch a vehicle? I'm sure there's lots that go into this, but in this case, you know, now the 2026 Macan, it does have the necessary hardware in order to do lane changes. Now, they claimed over-the-air updates back in 2024. I, as a consumer, pretty savvy like you guys, I was thinking, oh, it doesn't do lane changes on launch. Well, it will. Now we find out this year it'll never do it, right? So at least that I see that Rivian is at least coming out saying that you're not going to be able to do the things that perhaps, you know, the LiDAR will allow you to do in different levels of autonomy. But, you know, you're kind of screwing over the most – you know, the biggest Rivian fans that are going to come out and buy the first ones off the line, and they're not fully baked yet. So I
guess,
don't know.
Yeah. I guess they think one of two things.
It kind of burns me, guys. It really does.
So the early fans are either going to then sell those vehicles in a year's time and upgrade because they're hardcore Rivian fans. I don't know how many of those there are, but they'll either do that, or they'll delay their purchase, or they'll make their purchase and be happy with it, or they'll wait. Rivian need to sell vehicles because they got to make money.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if they don't have an overwhelming rush for the launch spec, I'm trying to justify this. It might not be the end of the world if they can just temper that a little bit. It seems crazy to say because you want to sell cars because you spent this much money on developing it. So I don't know. But maybe it wouldn't be the end of the world if, like Tom, I think you've said that, you know, you're not going to be first in line and you're going to wait for the new hardware.
And also the hardware that launches with this, Rivian is saying that it will provide point-to-point, you know, destination driving. So it's kind of like where FSD is now, supposedly. You know, you can just hop in it and say, take me here, and it'll go there. It's just that you won't get to that next level that Tesla is trying to breach now. They're trying to go from, you know, monitoring to eyes off. And so, you know, I mean, that's a big step, you know, going to the eyes off, but it's also launching with pretty good hardware as it is that it can do what basically they're saying.
That's a fair point.
It's
going
to be able to do what Tesla does now, point to point driving.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's possible that, you know, who knows if Tesla is going to come out and say that you need to have hardware 4.5 in order to do unsupervised, or 5 or something like that. And, you know, so that's a fair point. I think maybe the point I made about the Macan not ever being able to do lane changes, that's a very different, that's really bad in my opinion. What this is, if you're telling me it's going to be able to do point to point and take you from one, it's just not going to get you to that next level. Well, guess what? Maybe the existing supervised 4.0 hardware cars today or hardware 4, they're not going to be able to do it either. We don't know.
Yeah.
The thing is, the compute power is advancing so rapidly. And I think even the automakers are not understanding that, you know, when they develop something that it won't be able to do what they're hoping it can do, that, you know, in a year the computers that they have out are so much better that it can handle what they thought the last generation could. It might not even be a case of they're deceiving us, the automakers. They might not know. This is new stuff, guys. You know, we're not doing things that the market has done for decades. It's a new frontier. And I think, I mean, look at the promises Elon's made over the years. Do we know for a fact that he was just blatantly lying when he was saying by the end of the year, we'll go coast to coast, or by the end of next year? I don't know that. You know, I think after a number of times, you kind of say, you know, is he, what's going on here? But, you know, I also do, part of me does believe that he believed that they were going to be able to get to that point. It's just that they couldn't. With the hardware they had.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and the other thing, you bring up a really good point about compute. It's not just the hardware itself for the input. So, for example, if you have, you know, cameras, and now all of a sudden you add LiDAR, and imagine if you have two data points coming into a computer, and all of a sudden LiDAR says there's a, you know, an F-350 in front of you, slam on the brakes, and the vision says there isn't an F-350 in front of you, just go ahead and keep going, right? Mm. What do? Ty goes to the more conservative approach. But when you start adding third levels of data inputs into your computer, now you have that much more data to process, that much more compute you need to actually fire up. And then you can actually decide to have better decisions about those fine-tuned, you know, what is the vehicle going to, is it going to brake? Is it going to accelerate and all that? So It's interesting, the more complex these vehicles get, if you're using LiDAR, you're using radar, you're using, you know, vision, you're using ultrasonic, then not only do you need more hardware as data inputs, but you need more compute to process all that in a fast enough time to save somebody's life, because that's really what it comes down to. So this is, you know, it's really super interesting stuff, in my opinion, right now, at this evolution of, it's not just doing lane centering or lane changers. It's now going to be taking point to point, you know, within in an unsupervised manner at some point in time. So anyway, it's interesting.
So the Rivian system, as I understand it, it integrates all those inputs, then it sends them to the computer to do the, you know, final decision making or whatever. So it's they streamline that process a bit. So it's not, so adding more inputs like the LiDAR, it won't slow it down like the traditional method might have made it. But one question I have, like, for you guys. So it's $49 or $50 a month, $2,500 for the one time. So is that for the trucks that come out like this spring and the ones that come out with the LiDAR and the 1600 tops?
No. Launch spec comes with autonomy plus lifetime. So that's that $2,500 value baked into the launch spec cars. So,
but Dom's question is that next level of hardware that comes out the end of the year, is it going to be the same price? Right? Is that your question, Tom? Yeah, we don't know.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
But maybe
we don't know.
But you have a good point though. If the launch ones come with it already, this price must be for the and this is the gap between the launch versions and then the next hardware versions. Like if they keep making like the launch spec but without the launch package, you know, and so you can buy without the next gen hardware, but not the launch edition, right?
I mean, this is kind of a similar situation to what Tesla's got going on right now with supervised at $99 and then unsupervised, which is how much do you think they're going to charge for that? Well, like if they truly are able to deliver unsupervised, I would pay more than $99 for that. If I can get in the back of my car, I live in California, I can work on my computer for an hour and a half as it drives me to work. Time is money. So, you know, if in fact Rivian is going to have additional capabilities with the LiDAR, you know, the next when they come out in the fall, if they're saying that the capability of that car would be in fact similar to what Tesla is saying unsupervised will be, are we saying that that's what they're going to charge $49 a month for?
No, I mean, that's what it seems like. But it seems like they should be able to charge more, I think, I don't know.
First of all, they haven't announced anything like unsupervised yet. But these are all the questions that people would have, right? It's, you know, it's like there. No one really knows the answers yet to this. But it's logical to me that if you can get in your car and the car can drive you to work or drive you anywhere and you can do something other than drive, that has a much higher value than whether it's 49 or 99 a month. In my opinion, it does.
Yeah, and if it's that, then Rivian have to take on the liability, which is what Mercedes and BMW did with their Level 3 systems, which is to say, and that happens in China as well, although they don't take on the liability there. Like, the lights turn blue, or we have some blue lights on the outside. That tells other people that we're in autonomy mode. And then there's going to be regulations around it as well. But also, if it's eyes-off driving, then, yeah, the car makers then take on the liability because it's their tech. And, you know, apart from, I guess, you know, force majeure, where, you know, something happens that they can't yeah, predict. So the LiDAR supplier of this, so I'm doing this spin-off podcast called EV News China, and I have been for 6 months. It's going to be a short-term thing, but I'm fascinated by what's happening there. And last week, I literally reported on Thursday, which was there's a new LiDAR out that's like a 400-line system, which is, I don't know what LiDAR is, but in terms of like how the specs of it, but it was meant to be very good. And then the next day, BYD back a company called RoboSense. Now, I believe that's who's supplying Rivian. I'm pretty sure Rivian's never said it's RoboSense, but either way. And they're like, oh, here's our 2000 line LiDAR.
Wow.
And you're like, okay. So, but that is really compact. Now, LiDAR looks ugly. It's got the big taxi lights lump on the top of the vehicle, whereas the RoboSense one that I think Rivian will use is much more discreet. It doesn't quite go into the... I think it's still an external thing for being the best placement to see around the vehicle, but it just sees hundreds of meters in front of you, you know, and it just bounces those signals back like a bat. And so I think they said anything as small as a small animal in the road, hundreds of meters down the road, it can see it in the dark or in you know, no visibility conditions. It's incredible. So it does make me think that this is, you know, it's on its way, and that Rivian have access to all the technology that I rave about with China, and the autonomy there. So and what's interesting about tying it all together, I think largely people agree the best system in China at the minute is the one called Harmony, the Harmony Alliance. It's Huawei, right? And it's just proper. It's really not aggressive. That's the wrong word. Assertive in traffic with scooters going. It's just, when you watch the videos on YouTube of them using the Huawei system, it's just really good. It's driving like a human. And I think it was the head of that system that said, we can do it all with cameras, and we primarily would do it all with like XPeng and Tesla, but the LiDAR gives us the belt and braces to know, right, now we're absolutely sure in bad visibility and rain, stuff like that. So they can do a lot of it with just, like Elon's always said, with cameras. So fascinating. Can't wait to see what Rivian do with it. But no one's tried it yet. But there we go.
And Martin, I interviewed Brian Gu, who's the chief technology officer of XPeng, years ago. I interviewed him a couple times, and I asked him that specific question. Can you do it with just cameras? At the time, XPeng had a suite of LiDAR and radar and everything on their, God, I forget what they call it, their name for their ADAS. And he said, yes. He said, Tesla will get there. They said, you can actually do this with cameras. He said, but it's infinitely harder. And that's why we chose to use the full suite of sensors and LiDAR and radar. But then after 3 or 4 years of that, they dropped the sensors and said, we're going all camera. We can do it. So, you know, that was a question, if you recall, years ago that a lot of people had, like most people outside of Tesla had the thought that you can't get there with just cameras. But now it seems like more people actually believe you can get there. It's just basically what Brian was saying was it's harder, but you can get there. And that's what they've decided to do.
Wow. They call theirs X-Pilot.
Yeah, the X-Pilot. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
This thing's got 31. Their system has 31 sensors and up to 508 TOPS. That's a computer operations per sec, trillions of operations per second. And this new, just to put it in perspective, so that's 508 TOPS. The first initial Rivians have, the computer has 200 TOPS. And then the one that's coming this fall is 1600 TOPS. So a lot of, ton of processing power. And that's in the Rivian designed chip, I believe, right?
Yeah, well, that's called the ACM3 autonomy computer. Anyway, Cool. All right. Well, no. They say 45 grand is going to start at 45. So they say it. We believe them. But 60 is going to be the number that we got to get to for the launch cars. Before we leave, before we go, Tom, predictions on how well that will be received by the early reservation holders that don't mind waiting, that don't mind waiting. What do you think? 60K, is that a good number for them? Are they going to dive into that?
Absolutely. You know, I said it last week when we talked about price. I just wanted to see it start with a five. It is. And even it is with the destination, which I hate when we quote, and the automakers quote the price before, because you can't get the car without that. Why is that not?
You can't go get it.
Why is it not set on the price? Why doesn't regulation force them to put the price in? It's not, you know, 58. Whatever it was quoted, that the launch version is $59,485. That's what it cost. Yeah. So yeah, it still starts with a five. So for sure, I think that's a good. I think it's a good value at that price.
All right, okay, but you're still going to wait for the next hardware.
Oh, myself, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm pretty sure. But, you know, more than any reason, it's for content. You know, you know, maybe if I was just an individual buying it, I might have a different opinion, but you know, I need to be able to make content with the latest, you know, tech, and the version they're selling now is only going to be the latest tech for like 8 months, you know? So, I think I'll hold off. I do have the resi, and, I may very well go through that. It really depends on how the market is on my, first gen R1S. If it's terrible and I'm taking an enormous beating, I'll just keep it because we love that as it is, but we'll see when we get there.
All right. Okay. Performance dual motor, all-wheel drive, 87.9 kilowatt hour pack, 330 miles, 3.6 seconds, 0 to 60, and it's under 60 grand. So there you go. Launch spec. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, let's talk Bolt. Back in a mo.
The Batteries Included podcast is sponsored by EVChargingStations.com. If you drive an electric vehicle or you're planning to, this site is packed with comprehensive charger reviews, detailed DC fast charging graphs, and the latest news from all of the fast charging networks. You'll find real-world testing, easy-to-understand comparison, and deep dives into how different electric vehicles actually charge. Before you buy an EV charger or plan your next road trip, make sure to bookmark evchargingstations.com and make smarter charging decisions.
All right, welcome back to the Batteries Included podcast. All right, so we've gone from a really highly anticipated vehicle with the Rivian R2, crucial to the survival of that company, but to this one, the cheapest electric vehicle on sale in the United States right now. This is the 2027 model year Chevrolet Bolt, and it's now with dealers, and it's only here for a year. It's to do with factories and moving Equinox production out of Mexico, but it's a real shame. However, let's not be held back by that. Dave, for Out of Specs channels, you went and made a ton of Bolt videos.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is it looks like a Bolt EUV body, but they have properly sorted this inside, under the skin, tech, charging, everything. What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, first of all, Chevy has announced pricing, although the point I was just going to make, you see in the top left there where it says 27, whatever that number
600,
is.
600, yeah.
It's actually the number that they're telling everyone for the base LT is $28,990.
Okay.
Including destination.
Okay.
So I like that there. I don't know why that is on that screen that I put in there, but it is. $28,990. And the most expensive Bolt that you could get is in the RS trim with all the options, and it's $38,990. So there's a $10,000 gap between the low, the less expensive one and the most expensive one. The real headline numbers are all about charging here. How many times have we seen Bolts charging at EA 350s? And you want to go educate the guy why they shouldn't do that, right? And so the thing is, they've gone with an LFP battery pack with this car. And so what that means is that if you were to take, you know, if the average manufacturer of an EV with an NMC chemistry will tell you don't charge it every day to more than 80%, If you have a EV that's got 332 miles of range and you only charge that to 80%, that's 262 miles. Well, guess what? Chevy's telling you to charge this car. It's okay to charge this car every day to 100%, and that's 262 miles of range, irrespective if you get the LT or you get the RS. Both models come with 17-inch wheels. Both models come with a new tire manufactured by Michelin with a new chemistry that's a rubber compound that's in it. And both have 65 kilowatt hour battery packs. So there's no technical difference between the LT and the RS. The thing that you mentioned about them only building this for a year, it's actually going to be a year and a half. And what's very odd to me about this is that they're telling you that, right? They're telling you proactively, you know, we killed the Bolt once in 2023, and we're going to kill it again in a year and a half.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, so wait. So why would I buy this car? You might want to lease it, you know, just me to you, right? Just to protect yourself on the downside. But if you put that aside, this is a very good package. Chevy is very proud to say that this is the cheapest vehicle, not just EV, but it's the cheapest car, including internal combustion, that has hands-free driving optionally. So Super Cruise, if you remember, was so they used to have two models of the Bolt. There was the Bolt EV, which is the little cute one. Actually, I had one. I loved it. Great little car. Charged at 55 kilowatts. It had great range. Was an amazing daily driver, and it's pretty spunky. I mean, it's, you know, you zip it around, it's a nice little grocery getter and all that. And then they came out with the Bolt EUV. So they decided to kind of consolidate those two platforms in the rebirth of the Bolt into one. And this new Bolt is based on the EUV chassis platform. So I think that's a good decision because the extra length is actually in the rear seat. So you get an extra 3 inches of legroom in the rear seat now. And so it's pretty viable vehicle. They have taken the drivetrain from the Equinox and plugged it into this new Bolt. Unfortunately, even though this car has a NACS adapter, it's on the front left fender. And so for, you know, I think that there could be interesting. I mean, Tom, you know, big F-150 Lightning guy. How many times have you tried to inch up? I remember the first time you were up at Brewster, New York, trying to inch up to be the first one to charge in a Magic Dock. And it was like, man, and it, to add insult to injury, not only did the Ford put that flap, you know, obviously that was is CCS, but the flap opens towards the front of the vehicle. So now you got to put that. So they did not fix that, but there's a lot of really good things in here. Specifically on the Super Cruise, in the original Bolt EUV, you were able to order Super Cruise, but Super Cruise did not do lane changing. Now this vehicle with Super Cruise, it does do lane changing. It's got two radars in the back, one radar in the front, two extra ultrasonic sensors in the front. But interestingly, similar to Rivian, this is using it's using a mapped system. And unlike like if you get Super Cruise on a Caddy, like an IQ, or you get it on a Suburban, the versions of Super Cruise on those vehicles will do lane centering on non-mapped roads, but this one won't. And my understanding is there's no technical difference between the technology that's built into the Bolt and what is also perhaps, you know, in an Optic or something like a Vistiq or what have you. So the question I have is, why did Chevy not give lane centering to the Bolt? It's $3,255 for the option. So that's not a cheap option, but it will do lane changes and it will do something called follow. So I was on the 101 getting off some other exit. I like how in California, everyone says the 101, the 20, whatever. But it'll actually get off a road and continue and it won't even disengage if it's going highway to highway. So there's a lot of good here, guys.
Yeah.
I think it's a great little package, and it'll be interesting to see how they price this, because they are available at dealerships now, but it's only the base models. None of the Super Cruise cars have arrived yet at the dealerships. So they will be, you know, the base models. But, you know, they're super close. And if you look at the leases on the Equinox right now, those are actually, I think, leasing out better than the Bolts are.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. But great little car. Hats off to Chevy for bringing it back, albeit for 18 months.
That would sell really well here. Like, that's for us, that's a do everything car. That's a Kia EV3. That's a Volkswagen Golf. That's a do everything car. So I was on the Reddit or the forums, and somewhere they were discussing this vehicle this week, discussing your review. Actually, they were discussing your charge of it. Which, let's get into that first. 155 kilowatts peak, but more importantly, the curve is good, right? Because it's LFP. So up to about 40%, it just chugs. And it's like, it's a 26-minute 10 to 80. That's great, right? I think it's pretty good.
You'll see the UI that's shown there. It's all Google. There's battery preconditioning. There's manual preconditioning if you want. But assuming you got your battery temperature at the right temperature when you plug in, it shows you two numbers, which is cool when you plug in. There's a lot to talk about with the charging on this car that I think they've gotten right. You pull up to a Tesla supercharger, and there are three ways to authorize it today. One, you could use your Tesla app and say, charge my non-Tesla car. Two, you could use the My Chevy app and authorize it. Or three, you can go right into the UI on the Google display, and you can say, you're at 2C, start charge now. Right. Cool. from the entertainment. And according to Jeremy Short, the chief engineer of the Bolt, they are going to be offering an over-the-air update this fall, you know, when manufacturers promise things, right? Mm-hmm. But they're saying that they're going to be offering true plug and charge this fall through an over-the-air update at Tesla. So that's pretty good. Now, when you plug in, it shows you two numbers on the center, not on the on the screen in the center console. And the two numbers that it shows, the right number is saying how much the car is asking for from the charger. And then the left number shows you how much the car is actually getting. So, you know, how many times do you plug into a whatever, I don't care what charging station, you get a bad session and you're not really sure if it's the car or the charger, right? So here they're telling you, car's asking for 158, I saw 157, guys.
Mm.
And I plugged in at 10%. At 50%, I saw, for a split second, I saw just over 120, but I think it quickly jumped down to around 118, 117, somewhere in there. Compare 50% on a Model Y, Model 3, 105, 104 kilowatts. This thing was pulling more, flat curve. And at 80%, it was pulling 79 kilowatts.
Wow.
Which is more than the original Bolt ever pulled.
Yeah, yeah. So for that reason, this is my do-everything car, because that was the final thing that would possibly hold it back. So on the discussion of your video, someone was saying, this would be a great car if only I could road trip it. And I was thinking, what the hell? Like, what do you mean you can't road trip a car that has 262 miles and charges at not only 155 kilowatts, but holds it, and it's still pulling in 80 at 80%, and it's a 26-minute genuine 10 to 80, and it'll precondition. You can't you can't road trip that car. You've got problems. I got two young kids.
What do you think? I'm sorry to talk so much, but I'm excited. I loved going out there. I experienced the Bolt. What did you think of this little car?
Well, first of all, I think the people that say you can't road trip this are watching too many of my and Kyle's videos of us charging Taycans and Gravities, you know, because they're getting spoiled. You can absolutely road trip this. I like it, Dave. Actually, I might buy one.
You see the two numbers on the right there?
Yeah.
You see that number on the right is what it's asking for, and the number on the left is how much it's getting.
I love that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Super cool.
And I wonder if the number's always lower because it's asking for a certain amount, but the station, the station's delivering that amount, but a little bit isn't getting into the battery.
That's right. That's exactly what I mean? Right.
So that's what it is. It's not that the station isn't giving it everything it asked for. It's just measuring what's actually making its way to the pack. So yeah,
Tom, the thing was I didn't experience, but imagine if the car's asking for 156 and it's getting 80. Now you can you can point the finger at the charger.
Yeah, if the car is telling the truth, but
that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, and one of the things you mentioned earlier about the charge port being in the wrong location. So yeah, you know, for Tesla superchargers, it's not in the ideal location. And you referenced my Lightning, which has the charge port in the same location.
Right.
But the Lightning must be a foot and a half wider.
Yes.
And the charge port is probably a foot and a half to 2 feet further back. So yes. I wonder if, because the bolt is so small and the hood is so short, I wonder if I could pull up to a supercharger with my right wheels like just over the white line, an inch all the way up to the charger, if it would almost reach the charge port.
On a V3.
Yeah, on a V3.
Yeah, you know what?
It doesn't have that far to go.
I think you can do it.
Even if we intrude a little bit onto the parking spot to the right, it might be still wide enough for a Tesla to then pull in, use that stall, but be a little tight to me. You know what I mean? And because the car's so narrow and the nose is so stubby, that's going to be the first thing I do when I get one.
It's interesting. I talked to Chris, I forget his last name. He was the engineer on the whole, basically the drivetrain and also the battery engineer. And they're like, man, if we had to reposition, you know, where that flap was, that we wouldn't have been able to bring out the car because that would have been a major. Because using a lot of parts bins. It's got a lot of new, but they were starting with an infrastructure that was kind of handed to them, and knowing it's only an 18-month run, there's only so much you could do to be able to try and bring it back. And then the point that the battery engineer said, he goes, Dave, it's a short, stubby nose. You'll be able to pull up. It's not like an F1.
Oh, even said that?
Yeah, he said that to me. We had a big laugh about it. And not only that, Tom, but there are a lot more V3.5 dispensers out there. We'll call them V4 dispensers that are connected up to V3 chargers in the back. So, and those, there's no issue at all, you know, with the longer, you know, cables. So no issue.
I like it. I like the interface. I like the design for what is effectively the cheapest car, cheapest EV you can buy.
Yeah.
This does not, we've got some cheap EVs here. We've got some 12 grand, 14 grand, we've got some Chinese cars here, but there's that little last bit of polish that it feels like, you know, okay, so I'm not getting a great car here, but
There's a lot of people that are very angry at Chevy for no Apple CarPlay or no Android.
It looks
Auto.
Great though.
And
it looks
but it does have Google Play Store. They just released Apple Music as an app.
Yep.
But Waze you can't get as an app on the car. Mm-hmm. I love Waze, but guess what? Google Maps has the same social data embedded into it now. So what am I really missing?
Nothing. So, it's all owned by Google. Yeah. So
right, it's all owned by Google.
Same. It's the same back end. It doesn't look as friendly and funky and cartoony, but like Google Maps is, it's a bit more of a vanilla experience. But
you can watch Netflix on the screen. You can watch YouTube channels, you know, State of Charge YouTube channel. You can, you know, so it's really kind of, it's good. And it's zippy. The screen is very good. So listen, it's a great little car. I had plenty of headroom. You know, you can get a sunroof that opens in this sucker for $1,495. The tech package comes with four cameras, two in the side view mirrors, one in the rear, and one in the front. And it gives you 360-degree cameras. But what's also very cool is It gives you a little USB stick that you can stick in the front center console right by where the cup holders are. Yeah. And it records everything. So just like, you know, when you're in a Tesla, or it's like having I think it's close to 4K resolution. It looks amazing and you can download it. So that's really nice. Good. It's also got a digital mirror that it works and it's adjustable. And I've usually not liked those digital mirrors, but it's pretty damn good. And you can turn it, you can flip it to just the regular, mirror if you want as well. So, and here's the last thing I'll say. We drove it from the hotel, which was down in the valley over the mountains. Tom, I know you've driven on these roads a lot. And we ended up in Malibu and I was laughing. I was having so much fun just on these canyon roads going between 15 and 30. And then the regen that you have, no more paddles. You remember the paddles on the original Bolt where you could actually pull it in and you get a lot more regen? That's gone. But they do have three different levels of adjustability on the Bolt for regen. And so it's very fun. That right there shows you there's 20 standard features, safety features in the car for the $28,990 price. Things like cross traffic alert. It comes with adaptive cruise standard. I mean, I remember paying $2,500 not that long ago on some car for adaptive cruise alone without lane centering. So they're giving you an awful lot in this package here. So,
and NACS is standard. This might be my new favorite car for 2026 in the US. This is so GM to make something that records the cameras, has got Super Cruise, comes in at less than 30 grand, and they go, oh, we're going to make it for a year. You're like, what the heck? Come on.
Martin,
if you're worried about service and parts and availability, maybe lease it.
GM will be there for you. I'm not worried about. I wouldn't be worried about that.
So Martin, if they offered this in the UK, how much should they sell it? Could they sell this for £30,000?
Probably stick it on for 30, and then by the time you got some offers, it'll be 25, and dealer offers and monthly financing. And yeah, if this was a 25 grand, so 25 grand is a really sweet spot here, which is $30,000, £25,000. There's just a ton of stuff, whether it's the Chinese MG stuff or it's Renault 5, Renault 4, whether it's Citroën and Peugeot and all the Stellantis stuff that we've got. It's a really 25 is a really busy price point for family cars that do 300 miles.
But this is capable than a lot more like the Stellantis lineup, I feel like. And I think it's a better value than a lot of the cars you have in Europe, like from European manufacturers. So,
yeah, and it's just got everything. Like, it's got the space. It's got the range. It's got the charging. But a lot of those cars at 25 will charge at maybe 90 kilowatts or 100 kilowatts. This has got the LFP pack. This is great. This is really good.
So why isn't GM selling this like in Europe? I mean, and why like this short time frame? I don't really understand because it's a really great value.
So I asked the engineers that question about the short time frame, and they had a very brief window of opportunity to fire up a plant in Kansas City, Kansas, and they're going to be building, I believe, ICE cars there from Mexico in 18 months. And so they jumped on the opportunity to slap this thing together. And I think the rumblings that I'm feeling is that this is parts, not to say a parts bin car, that's being rude, but think GM is going to come out with something even better than this in 18 months. Wow. And so while everyone's saying you're only going to make it for 18 months, I think that they're why not sell the Bolt? There's a culture here with the Bolt owners that some of the Chevy guys talked about. You know, the Corvette guys, right? They're not to compare the cars at all, but there's a culture, there's a dedication, there's a camaraderie of Corvette owners. There's the same kind of click with Bolt owners. You find a Bolt owner, they're proud people. And so, you know, there's a lot of demand for this little car. And at the price point they're bringing it out, why not make some money and sell a bunch of these between now? Now, what happens if it sells like crazy? Do you think Chevy could shift gears and say, well, there's another factory that we could actually fire this up and make it over there? I don't know how easy that would be, but weird things have happened if they sell these things like crazy. But I have a feeling they've got something even better on the drawing boards. I really don't know, but I would say something's better. It's a great little holdover vehicle. If they can get the lease prices down on this, that I think is going to be key. Equinox right now is a heck of a vehicle. And I actually like the Equinox better than the Blazer EV. I think it's, I like the size. I like the way I sit. And guys, I don't know what more to say other than no frunk. So don't buy it.
Well, I tell you what, it gives Nissan a headache and it keeps the prices competitive for US buyers because between this and the Leaf, they're good choices. Right, let's move on. We've got a couple more stories we'll get to today. We've done our big segments for the podcast, our two big bits of news. But we mentioned it briefly at the end of last week's podcast. Tom, this is right in your wheelhouse. We've got all the details now of BYD's charging solution. Well, two things, the charging and the battery. Their new flash charging, as they call it, and their Blade Battery 2.0 LFP technology. The chargers are 1,000 volt, 1,500 kilowatt chargers. And they came out with 8 to 10 vehicles, which will get Blade Battery 2.0, which can use this to the full extent. So that does include vehicles we're getting over here in Europe. So it'll connect up to a modest grid connection because it's got 300 kilowatt hours of storage at the site, at each site, with a high C-rate battery and a supercapacitor to dump that energy into car. They think the average charging session is going to be 50 kilowatt hours. But here's the numbers. 10 to 70, and we always love 10 to 80 because otherwise it's a fudge, but we'll let them have this one. 10 to 70 in 5 minutes, and 10 to 97, because there's no taper, in 9 minutes. And at minus 30, it's 12 minutes. Yeah. Now going in the ground, they want 20,000 of these because it's BYD, and BYD is a so vertically integrated company. I mean, they make every widget and cable in their cars more than anyone realizes. So they've got the batteries, they've got all of the engineering and the electrical stuff side, and they've got plants around the world, in Brazil, in Hungary, obviously in China, that make this T-shaped, teal-colored 1.5 megawatt passenger car charging, 20,000 in the ground by the end of this year. It's the real deal. It's not alien technology. It's going to be every day for Chinese drivers.
Yeah, and I mean, as you mentioned, the point I wanted to make was how vertically integrated they are, and you mentioned that. They're also installing these megawatt chargers around the world. When I was in South Africa in Cape Town last year, I don't know if you remember, I made a little video short. They just made the announcement while I was there. BYD representatives were there in Cape Town. They made this big announcement. They're going to light up South Africa with their new megawatt chargers. You know, so that this isn't just for China. BYD is serious about these megawatt chargers, installing them around the world. And, you know, they have amazing tech. They just keep upping the game. It seems like every 6 months we get a major announcement from BYD about, you know, battery technology and charging technology advancements. It's really, you can't keep up with it. It's something else.
We're going to have to do batteries included in China. They're going to have to fly us out there and we'll do a week in China because we've just got to go and just drive cars and charge them over there. So I think that may have brought Geely's announcement forward, or maybe it was always planned, but shortly after Geely said, and we're doing the same, 1,500 kilowatt DC fast chargers, the new Zeekr 001, which in a different life is a Polestar 4, moves to a 900-volt architecture and 1,500 kilowatt DC fast charging. But here's what's fascinating. This technology, as Tom says, goes in the cars that are going overseas. So, for instance, one of those, Dom, I don't know if you can find a picture of a Denza Z9 GT. Denza is one of the premium BYD brands. The real top one, the supercar, hypercar, is called Yangwang. But a step down is called Denza. So they're making a Z9 GT. This is a Porsche Taycan in a different life. It's a Grand Tourer. It's getting Blade Battery 2.0, one of the many cars. And by the way, the cars that it starts in are $25,000 equivalent. They're going in the everyday family cars. this is coming in right-hand drive to the UK by the end of the year. And they're putting the chargers into the UK as well. So three-motor powertrain, 60 miles an hour in 2.7 seconds, 122 kilowatt-hour blade battery.
Wait, why did you pull up a Cross Turismo?
I was just going to say that. Isn't that a Cross Turismo?
How
or
dare
a Sport
you?
Turismo?
I mean, wait a minute. What is going on here? What were those numbers I just heard? This is crazy. Right. Do you know how long it takes me to walk from my car into the bathroom and get a pack of M&M peanuts and a coffee to come back?
Yeah, more than five minutes.
This is faster than gas charging.
Wait a minute, Dave. You keep your M&M peanuts in the bathroom?
That's a different topic, Tom, for a different broadcast.
I've seen many things in those dispensers that you can get in the gents' toilets, never M&M peanuts.
Actually, they're going to need to be in there because I'm not, you know, you can't even, well, I don't even know what to say.
They're going to have to do it. They're going to have to just, you know, walk and talk. And you're going to have to get a coffee, order the coffee on the way to the toilet, pick it up when you come back, because 5 minutes to 10 to 70. But this is the key with the new LFP technology. It's a 97% charge in 9 minutes, which, I mean, heck, we've been talking for 59 minutes, and that's flown by. So it's just alien. So this says 644 miles CLTC on the Denza. Look, this is China Cycle, wildly optimistic. It might be 400 miles. It's going to be, they still have the world's longest range EV. It's going to be less than a Lucid, probably. But it charges like an absolute beast. And, you know, it's going to be expensive. But this car comes here. I can't wait to see this in right-hand drive on local roads charging. Obviously, you've got to take this to a BYD charger to get that speed because nothing else is even close.
But this is a luxury car. So for that price, you're getting besides all the performance parts, you're getting that really nice interior, Napa leather seats, massage, ventilation, extended leg rest. Wow. Active side support, good side bolstering, I guess, on the seats is what they're saying there. But you can see if you're watching this on the screen, you know, this is interior, the back seat reclines. The front seat looks great. I don't know. This is like a properly quick, luxurious, with crazy electric capabilities, like this fast charging and you know, it's a three motor design. It's 900 some horsepower, I believe it works out to. So yeah, 0 to 60 in 2.7 seconds, which is as fast as anyone ever needs in a station wagon.
So I tried to zoom out and zoom on from what this is amazing. What does it all mean? It means that if these chargers become ubiquitous, and I wouldn't argue against technology improving, because we've seen it with our personal computers and our phones and now our EVs, that if this kind of technology becomes fast charging ubiquitous, what does it do to battery sizes? Because you could then genuinely have a 50 kilowatt hour or 60 kilowatt hour pack, because if you knew the charger was where you needed it to be and you were going to stop for 5 minutes and it was reliable, you wouldn't need a bigger battery. Yeah. Or you might say, you know what? I do want a 120 kilowatt hour battery. I want to pay the premium because I'm going to buy a pickup truck and I'm going to tow. I mean, Dave, you've just got yourself a nice used Ford with an extended range diesel tank. So the idea of a diesel extender has been around forever. You could have the extended range battery pack that charges in maybe it's a 12 minute charge on a pickup truck, but all of a sudden it unlocks towing and elevation and all the things that pickup trucks haven't done very well in the battery era.
So, Tom, I remember a few years ago, a conversation you and Kyle were having about the vision of the future, which is not bigger battery packs. It's smaller battery packs and better, reliability and more ubiquitous charging, as you say, Martin. And what that does is it makes the cars more efficient. You're carrying around less weight and you don't worry about. I mean, if you were going to leave, Tom, from Jersey right now to go to drive a gas car anywhere in the country, would you even think about where you're going to get fuel? You just You wouldn't even think about it. You might leave with a quarter tank. You might leave with an eighth tank. You don't even think about it, right? And so that's when I am listening to what you're saying here, Martin, that's where things are going. Now, it sounds like it's going to start in China, or it already has, and it's going to go over to Europe and then eventually here. But the ramifications of charging everywhere at higher speeds will just mean less weight, more efficient, and
less
cost. I think that's less cost.
Cost is going to go down as a result.
Less resources, less resources to build. You can build two cars for every one car.
Yeah, I've long said that I do believe when charging becomes ubiquitous, high speed charging like these megawatt chargers from BYD, when we're talking, under a 20-minute stop. 10 minutes. This is under a 10-minute stop. But even if you can compress it down to 10 to 15-minute stop, okay, I do believe that we're going to kind of settle in on around 200-mile range for the average electric vehicle. And I think that'll be a sweet spot where it won't be inconvenient to having to stop and charge all the time. And the people that charge home still won't have to use public infrastructure. But the people that can't charge at home, live in multifamily dwellings, apartments, and so forth and so on, the average person drives 30 or 40 miles a day here in the U.S. They still only have to refuel once a week if the vehicle has a 200-mile range. So I still think that that's what we're going to settle on. I have a lot of pushback from, and I'm sure we're going to see comments on this video. People say, I'll never buy a car that only has a 200-mile range. But I really do believe that that's where the market's going to settle in at. I think you'll be able to buy a bigger battery pack if you want one for your specific use case. But I think we're going to see, 45 to 50 kilowatt hour battery packs become the norm on many vehicles 10, 15 years from now.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's the future. Yeah. This is the future. So and one of the great things, I know people don't go with me on this thought, but one of the great things about the downturn, the pause that we've taken in EVs, particularly in America right now, is it allows the car companies to focus on batteries. So Ford have got a huge investment in batteries that they're having to re-divert into grid battery energy storage. The same happens this week. Volkswagen turned on their first grid-attached storage to the German grid to do energy trading and renewable soak up and stuff like that, and using the PowerCo batteries because they built all this facilities and the cars aren't there yet. And one of the great things about that is the car technology pushed battery technology to get better quicker, because if you were talking about putting four of these chargers in at 1.5 megawatts each, oh great, I'll just pull a 6-megawatt grid connection out of my backside, should I? That's never going to happen in a million years. It would never go in the ground. But because BYD are putting battery backups to all of this, because EVs have gone in step with battery technology and pushed battery technology forward, and now some of the car companies have got a bit of excess capacity, we're going to see batteries integrating into our life because they're not used in the cars at the moment. I'm so excited about this little phase, this little pause that we've had, because it allows markets to catch up, and BYD couldn't do this if they didn't have the battery technology as well to be that buffer at the chargers. So, man, I'm pumped about all of a sudden the future has become a lot more clear with this and with Geely's one as well. And there'll be more. NIO were forced into the head of NIO responded and put a really good defense forward for the battery swapping, and okay, BYD weren't saying that this is better than battery swapping, but NIO sort of felt so defensive that they came out and made a really big case for no, battery swapping is better because we can attach, we can slow charge the batteries and we can have grid storage at our energy stations and stuff like that. And that's all true. BYD weren't saying that this is better than battery swapping, just a different path to the same destination. Man, I love it. I love it. So,
but it is better than better. With battery swapping, I always had you just need so much more capital. I think they pull that off because you have to have all those packs ready to be picked up and swapped, right? So
I'd hate to be NIO, because NIO started this. They built their first one in 2018, and they've put 4,000 in the ground. I think they want to get to 6,000 by the end of this year of battery swap stations, like globally.
Right.
Well, BYD want 20,000 of these by the end of this year in 9 months.
Right.
You know, sucks to be Neo. Well,
I mean, they should be able to see this coming. Like, you know, batteries are only going to get better and better.
There is a case for battery swapping.
There might still be going forward. Yeah.
The idea of not owning all of your car doesn't work in some cultures. Right. The idea of I'm buying a bit of my car and then I'm paying monthly for the other bit doesn't work with many people. So there you go. Hey, let's finish off. Look at our time. Let's finish off by telling you about a really bonkers van that no one's going to be able to afford, but we love that they're making it. Mercedes revealed the new luxury van, the VLE. This is a replacement to the V-Class. It's on a purely a custom-designed van.ea platform. This is not like the V-Class or the EQV. This is designed from the ground up to be a luxury electric van. It's got 115 kilowatt-hour usable pack. They're aiming for 325 miles, you know, real world on the motorway. Comes with a smaller pack as well in time. 800 volt architecture, and it comes with either a 6-seat, a 7-seat, or an 8-seat layout. I think the one that captured most imaginations on the YouTube reviews that came out this week was the 7-seat layout, because it has the two captain's chairs in the back. It's got a button that you can push and a cinema screen. An 8K cinema screen comes down from the roof for the second row, and the seats are, you know, not that I travel a lot in first class, but they are first class airline seats, and this thing is entirely modular. So if you want to get the base version, you can get it on the one where the seats slide on rails. You can take the seats out and just have a big storage van if you want, or you can get the one where the seats are fixed in, because they are electronically adjustable. You can adjust the seats from the app, so that if you are the driver and you've got some customers, you're doing an airport run or something, and you want to move those second row seats all the way to the back, the app has configuration saved, and you can move all the seats individually, either on the app or in the car. It's got not the hyper screen, but the super screen, I think it's called, but it's still the whole piece of glass all the way across. And what haven't I mentioned? And it charges at 315 kilowatts, and it's the real deal. It's a luxury shuttle. It's a van, let's face it. You can't get away from it being a van. They've made it really slippery. It's a limousine. It's CD 0.25. So it's really slippery for a brick. And I love it. It's incredible. Starts at about 65,000 euros in its base spec, but it'll go up to like 100. And there's going to be a VLS version as well for 200 grand, because like the Maybach version. Because why not? I love it. It's bonkers. You got any interior shots of that second row, Dom?
Let me go hit the play button again. Sorry. I paused it just for that side view so everyone could get a really good look at the styling of this thing. And so this is kind of amazing, especially that angle. This thing is kind of amazing. So this is a really big market in Asia, like these big personal luxury limousine-like vans. Like in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, where I just was, so they have the Toyota Alphard or the Velfire. There's like thousands of them. They sold 18,000 of these things just in last year alone, this one particular make and model of luxury van. And so Zeekr 001's in this, the Volvo EM90, XPeng X9. It's all in this like luxury van segment. And Mercedes has decided to attack this market somehow. Well, actually, the number of markets is kind of limited. It's, I think, Germany, the UK, the US. So this is supposed to be coming to the US, Japan, yep. South Korea. So they're missing some markets, but I don't know. So this market segment, this luxury van thing, is not a thing in the US. And I don't think this thing is going to make it a thing in the US. I don't know. I just think it's like,
Tom, you're chomping at the bit. What are you thinking, man? Come on.
I don't see this having a market in the US at all. Right. I just keep remembering watching. I don't know if you saw, there was like a viral video that went out of this lady doing a commercial, and she talks about how amazing it is that it has power windows. And she presses the button. She's like, and the windows are power operated Don't tell the kiddies. And like, it's on X, and it went viral. Like, it was like, I can't believe she's talking about how proud she is that it has power windows. It's like a $200,000 van. Like, what do you mean it has power windows? Like, but anyway, yeah, I think it's a cool vehicle. I just, you know, I can't get excited about this. You know,
I think this is brilliant. This is
I think it's cool, but Martin, how many of these are they going to sell?
Now, the V-Class is a big deal, actually, for Europe, for a lot of European van buyers. The V-Class is very important. Of that, the electric EQV was something like 6-8% of all their sales. So in the electric version, which was on a combustion powertrain, didn't exactly sell a lot. This is even more expensive. It's got the big screen like the BMW i7, like the Maestro S800 in China, like the Maybach. You just push a button on the, and the screen comes down from the roof, and all the blinds come down from the windows, and the roof blacks out, and it's entirely black, and you can watch the movies. Look at this. Down comes the screen.
There it is.
You know what? She's actually watching a video of the new Bolt, and she's all excited.
She's watching you do a charge test of the new Bolt. That's what she's doing.
She's like, wow, look at that Chevy Bolt. I think this thing is super ugly, but I kind of want it. It is. I don't know. Like,
really?
It's not ugly.
I don't know. As long as you're driving me around, Tom, I want it. Okay. I don't know that I want to drive it.
I'll drive this any day. I just don't think I can't see more. I can't see a market in the U.S. for this. I'm sorry. Maybe Europe loves the V-Class. I don't see this going or very many of these getting shipped here. And the ones that they did do, the dealers are not going to be happy because they're going to sit on their lots for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just think it doesn't have the presence of like the Zeekr 001. It's just like, I don't know what they were thinking with the styling. Like, it's classy, Dom.
It's a Mercedes-Benz, Dom. It's not one of these crazy Chinese ones.
Martin, you got to get your prescriptions checked. Your glasses are off. There's something wrong.
Dave, we got to get one of these for the next Eastern Edge race. This would have been good.
I mean, sitting in the back of that Escalade IQ, that's got nothing over this. This is way better. Oh,
that'd be a great long distance road trip. Hey, get a bunch of these like luxury vans over here.
I just think the people that can afford this, they don't take long road trips. They fly.
Right.
You know, they don't drive anywhere more than 100 miles from their house. If it's more than 100 miles, they're on a plane. If you can afford this,
that's true. That's true. It's a couple of $100,000 for the VLS top spec version. So it's really special. In China, if they sell them, and they got a lot of competition in China actually from domestic manufacturers, and the premium brands and Mercedes are having an awful time in China because the Chinese have discovered that they can make their own really premium cars and these vans they love. If it does okay there, there's no doubt that anyone buying this is never going to drive it. They have a driver. Like, they simply get driven. They can afford to have a driver. So the second row is really important. I'd love one. I don't like my children enough to put them in the second row, so I can't afford one. I wouldn't buy one anyway because they smush yogurt into everything. But if my kids were ever left home, I'd have one immediately. They're gorgeous. I love this. It's so cool. You're not buying what I'm selling, unfortunately.
Look, this is what it's competing against. So, Martin, look at the front of this thing. Ugh. Like a massive. It's massive. It makes a big, bold statement. It's like square. It's like maybe not this particular one. This is a Zeekr 009, but there's a number of other ones with varying aesthetics that are still way, way better than what the Jelly Bean.
That's been hit by the ugly stick. That's awful. That's terrible. If you're going to be driven at that kind of million RMB level, then there are other things that you'd like a Maestro or a Maybach in China. So it's a tough sell everywhere. But hey, I wish Mercedes-Benz all the luck. If they want to send one my way, I'll happily review one for 6 months. Right. We should probably call it a day. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Dave, thank you very much for bringing all your Bolt knowledge to the podcast. We love it. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed this. I'd love to come back anytime Kyle calls me and says, Dad, can you fill in for me? So it's all good, and thank you. It's really good to be back with you guys. I miss you all very much, and thanks for having me.
We always want to hear what you, because you've just got into a new Model Y. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's for another episode. Okay, I got lots to talk about.
If it's a lot, we'll come back. We'll come back.
Yeah, I got a lot to talk about.
So. All right,
but I respect Dave. That's your channel. Our viewers can find everything that you do. I respect Dave. All kinds of cars, man. You make a lot of videos.
We do. We put it. Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Excellent. All right. Well, there's a tease for next time. Thank you guys for watching. Thank you for if on the YouTube channel you hit like, it helps let other people know who watch kind of car content, EV content, that they might like this to help us grow the podcast. We really appreciate it. And leave us a comment as well on anything that we've talked about. Agree, disagree, whatever. It's all right. We'll all be friends. Leave us a comment and we'll reply to you over the course of the next week. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you again very soon. Hey, Tom. Say ciao.
Ciao.